Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time. Here we go with the Monday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and like I warned you on Friday, Dan is moving into his multi-million dollar mansion for the next few days. So he's unable to make it until, I believe he's coming back Thursday. So since Schomburg Stu already lives in a mansion, he doesn't have to move. He's willing to come and help me out. So Stu, thanks for coming on.
No problem. I wish I were in Dan's income brackets myself, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah, well, you know, he was smart and he married rich, so we got to give him credit for that.
For sure.
So, but anyways, if you'd like to call in and talk to Stu or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturday mornings, but swing on over there, check out what's going on. You just never know what the heck will pop up. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, we greatly appreciate that. There's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we still don't have Stu on Twitter, but I am at Burke Time, so you can hunt me down there, and I will relay any message you need to, Stu. So we will be okay. Yes. But, all right, well, you know, it's still baseball season, and while we loaded up on football FanDuel yesterday, I did do a lineup today, so here's what I came up with. I know Clayton Kershaw's pitching tonight, but I kind of figure that's the obvious choice. So I'm going a little different route here. I'm going with Doug Fister of Boston as my pitcher for $7,800. He's been pretty hot lately, so I'm going to try to jump on the bandwagon. He's pitching against the Orioles. They're pretty much out of it now, I think. Boston can get a win there and help me out. Catcher, I went with Travis Dinaldo of the Mets for $2,800. He's hitting fifth in their lineup. First base, I got Matt Olson of the A's. He's also hitting fifth for them, and he's $4,300. Brian Dozier of the Twins at second base. He's leading off for the Twins tonight. He cost me $3,900. Josh Turner of the Dodgers at third base. He's hitting second for them. Cost me $4,000. Shortstop is Marcus Semien of the A's. He's leading off for them tonight, cost me $3,500. Then my outfield consists of Marcell Ozuna of the Marlins for $3,400. He's their cleanup man. Another cleanup man, Adam Jones of the Orioles, cost me $3,300. And you know my rules, when he's in the lineup, I'm playing him. So for $2,000, I have Ichiro as my third outfielder hitting seventh tonight. So there you go. We'll recap it really quickly. It's Doug Fister pitching, Travis Dinald catching, Matt Olson at first, Brian Dozier at second, Justin Turner at third, Marcus Semien at short, and the outfield is Marcell Ozuna, Adam Jones, and Ichiro Suzuki. They only have one contest tonight. It's the, I believe they listed it at 7:05 because they're Eastern time, but it's 6:05 for me here. So you got a little bit over an hour to get your lineup in and get it rolling, and hopefully things work out for you and you can cash some money down the stretch here.
No, I think you made some wise
choices. Oh, all right. Yeah, you know, I really was going to go with more Marlins. I believe they're facing Matt Harvey tonight. And when he pitched against the Cubs, I loaded up on Cubs and it actually worked. So I thought about it, but then I thought, well, two's enough just in case. I know he's been struggling, but I figure sooner or later he might right the ship, and I don't want it to be tonight, and I end up eating it because of it. So
you didn't pick any Brewers, did you?
No Brewers tonight. I did not like their matchup. I know they're playing in Pittsburgh, but I just wasn't thrilled with anything they had that. And I wanted to get two A's in my lineup because they're another team that I think can hit tonight. So, the Brewers are going against Jameson Taillon, who I know has been better as of late. So,
let's root for Pittsburgh. I may have asked you this before, but you mentioned the various dollar things that your lineup cost tonight. Are you restricted as to, is there a top number you can go to, or is there any kind of restriction in that respect?
You're given, I think it's $45,000 or $60,000. I forgot what it is. And you have to build off that. And then, you know, obviously once you're out of money, you're out of money. So yeah, you have to work it in and try to figure out who's going to do what. And, you know, this way, obviously not everybody is just jumping on board and taking, you know, the top guys.
Right. As I said, I think you made some nice choices. I think Jones is a good pick. I have a feeling he's going to do well tonight.
Yeah, you know, I always try to go with the matchups I like. I know I don't have the, you know, computer models that a lot of these guys have that win. I just kind of look at it, you know, on my own and try to figure it out. And if I think, you know, this team is going to hit, I like to try to get a couple guys in from that team. And, you know, like I mentioned, when I picked Doug Fister, he's been really good his last, God, it might be going up to 4 or 5 starts now. You know, and obviously he's part of the reason, you know, that they felt comfortable sticking David Price in the bullpen. So I'm hoping this continues. You know, sadly, I do kind of have that same effect that we have when we all select the same football team. I can jinx guys, and I'm just kind of hoping that I did not do that to Doug Fister tonight, and it works out for me.
And of course, you didn't have that all that much to pick from tonight because there weren't that many games scheduled in the major leagues.
Yeah, well, you know what's weird is sometimes I do better when I don't have to go over all the games. I don't know if it's, you know, just one of those things I do where I start looking at too much when there's more games, or, you know, how it kind of works out. But yeah, the smaller sample size like this for me is normally when I do well. So I'm hoping that kind of continues and I can get on a nice winning streak. I haven't managed to cash anything here lately. So it would be good to get something here as the season wears down.
As they say, maybe you'll get off the schneid tonight.
Yeah, because I didn't get anything in football yesterday. You know, I know I was joking with you before. My best lineup was the one that had Jay Cutler quarterback. So that was kind of humorous. But, you know, just, well, I stayed away. I didn't have any Bears at all. I know Mr. Fantasy really liked Tariq Cohen, and that obviously blew up in his face. But yeah, I stay. There's really nobody on the Bears offense that would interest me as putting in as a fantasy player. I don't ever see them doing much.
Yeah, Mr. Howard had quite a day too, didn't he, for the Bears?
Yeah, and then he got banged up on top of it. So just what they need is, you know, their best, you know, their actual best offensive player now to get hurt. So.
Yeah,
but yeah, you know, I know, you know, since we brought it up a little bit here, you know, I've been listening to it all day, and I don't really understand people when it comes to this. I get that you're ticked off that the team stinks, and you were a little excited after week one because they stayed with the Falcons, and in reality, they should have won that game. You know, they got their brains kicked in by what looks to be a pretty decent Tampa Bay team yesterday. What I can't figure out, and maybe you can explain this to me, is why does everybody want Mitchell Trubisky to play quarterback? I mean, is getting killed as a rookie the best thing for this guy?
It's not, but that's just human nature. You're always, whenever the starting QB is not very good, you always want to see that second quarterback come into the game, and believe me, I've seen it before over the years. And even the great ones, when they start in their first two or three games, they're going to get murdered pretty badly. And in fact, I remember going way back now. I remember Johnny Unitas coming in. I think I was at the game at Wrigley Field, and he came in for his first start. There was an injury, and he was shellacked by the Bears. So you're going to take your lumps. Why would you want Trubisky to take his lumps like that?
Yeah, I haven't quite figured that out. I mean, all you got to do is look at, David Carr. You know, the Texans brought him in number one, and whatever talent he had got beat out of him as a rookie when he was sacked literally, I think it was close to 70 times. You know, both of the Bears' starting offensive guards are out. Their top receiver is gone, along with Kevin White. I don't know what you could describe him as. He's just another receiver on the team because we never really saw what he could do. But why do you want to plug a guy in? And I get it. Backup quarterback is always the most popular guy on a losing team.
Exactly right.
But is watching him get sacked over and over and just have the life taken out of him really the best thing for his career in the franchise?
It's not. In both cases, I would think that the management would be a little bit smarter than that and have our regular great quarterback take his lumps throughout the course of the season. Maybe get him in for a few plays, but that's about it. Otherwise, he's going to get hurt. He can get hurt seriously, too. And they don't want that to happen.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with, letting him sit and, sit and watch and learn. I mean, the guy only had, I think it was 13 college starts. So, he's not exactly super qualified here. They always talk about, well, look what he did in the preseason. Well, all those guys you put those numbers up against on preseason are no longer in the NFL. Dan and I coined is they now drive for Uber, is the phrase Dan and I coined. It used to be bagging groceries, but we've modernized it. So,
well, that's good that you guys joined the modern era, but you're certainly correct. And all the guys he competed against are gone. They're no longer in the NFL. So what he did in preseason is really meaningless. Although he does show potential, and let's see what happens in a year or so.
Yeah, you got to groom him. He's got to learn how to play, in the NFL. And, if you want to throw it out there, okay, Deshaun Watson made the start for the Texans on Thursday. And while they did win the game, did you really think he looked that good?
No, I think they won in spite of him. They certainly, what did they score?
Yeah.
13 points?
Yeah, so yeah, I believe it was 13, yeah. Yeah, when you look at it, I mean, he scored the only touchdown, but you're still talking about a guy who he only threw for 125 yards, and I can, okay, I'll give you, the Bengals have a pretty good defense. And, I think the only reason Houston won is because they were playing the Bengals, and Cincinnati just, I don't know, they're just clueless. But I mean, I don't know if this game helps his development here. I pulled up his stats. He was 15 of 24 for 125 yards. He did run five times for 67 yards. He had the big long touchdown run. But yeah, I mean, besides taking the actual snaps, I don't think it really helped him much being out there. I mean, it was like, okay, here you go. I mean, we'll see how he does, next week, but maybe in the second half of the season he's capable, but, it doesn't make sense to, run Trubisky out there and just, again, why get him pummeled? I don't get it.
Here's an interesting question, though. If the starting quarterback for the Bears gets hurt, would you bring Sanchez in instead of Trubisky?
Well, I know the way they have it scheduled now, Trubisky's been the number two, so they could use him in games if they want to. It would be interesting. I mean, obviously, Sanchez is a veteran guy. He knows, how to handle things. But, I think depending on where you are in the season, you know, maybe if we're after the halfway point, I go to Trubisky. But like, if it happens, like say it happened next week, I think I would go to Sanchez just to be on the safe side.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
You know, and especially like, you know, next week, that's the other thing I don't get. You guys, they actually want to plug Mitchell Trubisky into the starting lineup against the Steelers, who are known as one of the best teams in the NFL for disguising defenses. So yes, we want to stick a rookie in here against a team that knows how to cover things up. Even less sense. I mean, obviously they're not going to win the game, you know, unless they're extremely lucky. But it baffles me listening to, you know, the radio just, we'd be so much better if he played. Why would we be better? You don't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. And I hope he doesn't get into the game, because Pittsburgh's always had that reputation. They're a hard-hitting team. And I would worry about a serious injury happening to him, put him into the game.
Yeah, you know, I guess the question I would love to hear some of these idiots answer is, did you really expect the Bears to win either of these games? You know, I think the game against Atlanta gave people too much false hope. You know, and obviously Atlanta showed a little more of their true colors last night. They basically blew out a really good offensive Green Bay team. So, you know, you wonder what happened. Yeah, you know, you wonder what the hell happened to them week one against a crappy Bears team. But, you know, Tampa's an improving team. The game went pretty much how I expected. You know, I mean, I'm a little surprised the Bears didn't keep it closer. They ended up getting beat by 22 points. But, you know, you look at their upcoming schedule. You know, it's Pittsburgh at home. Then they go to Green Bay. They host Minnesota. And then they go to Baltimore. You know, if Minnesota has Sam Bradford, there's not a win on that schedule right now. I mean, they're looking at 0-6.
Yeah, I don't see any wins on the first six games at all.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think if Minnesota has to play Case Keenum, then I think the Bears have a shot, because he's just horrible. I mean, they looked pathetic yesterday with him under center. And, you know, it doesn't matter how much work he manages to get. He's not going to be he's worse than Mike Glennon. He's not a capable NFL quarterback, even though I know he's been around the league a long time. After that, okay, you know, so they get 0-6, then they're hosting Carolina, and then they've got to go to New Orleans. You know, maybe if the chips fall right there, they manage to beat one of those teams. I mean, Carolina hasn't really shown anything. I thought they were going to be a lot better than what they were, but, you know, they've managed to win a couple games, but they haven't played great. Of course, it is only 2 weeks, and, you know, New Orleans defense, New Orleans, you know, I don't think anybody can figure out, because after all the years there, Sean Payton still can't fix that defense. I don't know what they do.
No, very porous defense. But against the Bears, I don't think it makes much difference. So I'm looking at the 0-8 myself.
Yeah, they have a really good shot of going into the bye week 0-8. You know, I mean, that wouldn't, you know, wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I think, you know, you and I talked before. I legitimately saw them as a three-win team. If they got lucky, maybe they could pick up a fourth win. But, yeah, you know, even that after yesterday's game is starting to look a little shaky, because, you know, I think down the road I had them beating San Francisco, but San Francisco has been competitive the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm wondering if that's going to, you know, if that's going to turn around and kind of end up being a little different game than, you know, I thought it was. And obviously, you know, these are way down the,
right,
you know, down the road here. So it's not like, you know, things are going to change a million times before we get there. But yeah, it's just kind of, you know, it's not even entertaining anymore just listening to these goofs talk, because, you know, A, it's the same thing over and over, and B, they just don't seem to realize that it doesn't make any sense for the Bears to play them right now.
It would probably hurt them more than help them, that's for sure.
So yeah, I, you know, it's just like, great, you know, thanks guys. You know, let's get the guy, you know, let's get the guy killed. And, you know, then we can complain about, well, now, you know, we got to play Mark Sanchez. Cause you know, it, yeah. Okay. You're morons.
I wonder, maybe we'll be do something akin to what the White Sox did yesterday, right? Down to the last out. And the Bears might go to the last game before they maybe win the game, but who knows? They could run the gauntlet this season. Would you be surprised? I guess it's pretty hard to do that in the NFL, but I'm thinking maybe less than three wins. I thought three or four wins myself when the season started, but I don't know. I may have been too optimistic there.
Yeah, well, you know, and I know I'm always harder on the Bears than I am, you know, the other teams, because they're the local, you know, they're the local team and all that garbage. But you know, I mean, with the exception of maybe the Jets, I'm not quite sure that there's a team out there that's looked worse than the Bears. You know, even Cleveland, you know, has looked better than the Bears have here, and I just don't know. And the Bears, you know, the Bears have to play. And well, to be fair, Indianapolis has been pretty bad, you know, especially without Andrew Luck. But yeah,
they looked bad
yesterday. I just don't know. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, we're going to end up with another top five draft pick. It's just how high is that draft pick going to end up being for them?
Well, I need so many players that I hope they don't get another quarterback.
Yeah. So, well, you know, I mean, I hope they're not stupid enough, you know, to draft another wide receiver that high, because I killed them for making Kevin White pick when they did it. And sadly, I turned out to be very correct. You know,
very
he's been a complete joke.
Yeah, he could be done. Who knows? He could be done. Well, he's certainly not going to play anymore for the Bears, but his career might be over too. Who knows? Injury prone guy like that showed nothing.
Yeah, you know, I think the Bears have to decide if they're going to pick up his option as a first-round draft pick. You know, he has that fifth-year option. Boy, I better see a rejection on that.
I'm hoping, and I just don't see him doing that. I think he's done as a Bear.
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't be a bad thing, you know, get him healthy and let him go. He definitely, you know, he definitely doesn't need to take up a roster spot. So, you know, we'll have to see. But yeah, you know, yesterday I was, you know, there were a couple things that always kind of surprise me, as the games go on. And obviously we got the game tonight, you know, it's Detroit at the Lions at the Giants. But you know, like I'm incredibly surprised with how poor Seattle's offense is. You know, they finally managed to score a touchdown yesterday, and then they missed the extra point.
Yeah, they have been surprised. I've certainly been surprised about their poor offense so far this season. Of course, it's only two games, but you would expect better than that.
Yeah. You know, Carolina's kind of in the same boat. You know, they won 9-3, so their defense held up well yesterday. But again, 9 points, you're not going to beat too many teams in the NFL with a by putting up 9 points.
No.
So.
No. Yeah, they haven't shown off that either.
Yeah, you know, I think even in a win, the Cardinals were extremely disappointing because they had to go to overtime to beat the Colts. You know, I really thought that, you know, the Cardinals would come out and show their offense, even without David Johnson yesterday. And they were just, you know, they're another team. I mean, literally, that window is closed. You know, at one point in time, they may have been a Super Bowl contender in the NFC. They're not even a playoff team this year. I think the Jaguar fans went through a little bit of what the Bear fans did. You know, week one, they looked so good beating Houston, but then Houston didn't go out and show much in week two, and the Jaguars ran into Tennessee. And yeah, that kind of ended for them.
Have you in the first 2 weeks of the season have any teams surprised you in terms of they won or you didn't think they would do that well?
Yeah, you know, I'm the one team that really kind of jumped out front and center to me are the Chiefs. You know, obviously they had the big start where they ran away from New England late in that game. You know, but, you know, even yesterday, I mean, you know, they beat a pretty good Philadelphia team. And, yeah, it's a bit of a surprise how well I think they've looked. You know, the odd part is they lost their number one running back, but that rookie stepped up and filled right in.
Yeah, they have been a surprise team for sure.
You know, and I'm trying to think. You know, I'm a little surprised. You know, Denver is 2-0. I really thought the Cowboys would beat them last night. I'm surprised at the way they just manhandled Dallas. I mean, they beat them pretty much every which way. And I think in a way they gave good teams the blueprint to beat the Cowboys. You know, it's just, will these other teams have a defense like Denver's to do the things you need to do to stop Dallas? And I'm not sure if there's anybody else in their division who could do it, but they, you know, they showed, like, you know, yesterday how to handle it.
And I'm not really surprised that they won, although I picked Dallas, although I'm surprised at how easily they seemed to dominate that game. I thought it would be a lot more competitive.
Yeah.
Than it turned out to be.
Yeah, I really thought Dallas with their offensive line would go in there and pound on it's a smaller Denver defense. You know, they're small and fast. That's the kind of defense they play. I really thought Dallas had a chance to go in there and physically dominate with, you know, a running back like Ezekiel Elliott, and they couldn't. You know, Denver did a great job of, you know, getting the stops they needed. I think Elliott had 8 carries for 9 yards, something like that. So they really shut him down.
They did. And they could be a lot more solid than I thought they were going to be this year.
You know, and, you know, I am interested already looking ahead the next week. As you know, we've got the Cleveland Browns at the Indianapolis Colts. And it's already been confirmed that Andrew Luck will not play. So as weird as it sounds, that may be a game I'm actually leaning towards Cleveland at early in the week here, because I just don't understand how the Colts do anything without Andrew Luck.
Yeah, well, they do have the home field advantage, but I'm not sure if that's going to be enough. And Cleveland's looked competitive so far. That's a tough one to call, actually.
Yeah, and, you know, you got to figure, you know, their coach is Chuck Pagano. You got to figure he's gone after the year, if not even before. So,
yeah, I'm
you know,
for
it's just going
to. Right. I think I'm waiting for the announcement when the Bears extend Fox's contract another 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. You know, that'll be an interesting thing because, you know, remember Lovie Smith had to go, you know, he, you know, obviously a couple of coaches ago now, they just had to get rid of him and he had a winning record and, you know, they brought Trestman in and it, you know, it worked that 1 year. The offense looked really good and everybody was really excited. And then it blew up after that and he had to go. And now we've got John Fox, who's got a worse record than either of those guys. So I don't know. You know, I mean, does he keep getting a pass because they're rebuilding or, you know, because he's got a better resume than Trestman? I don't seem to understand why there doesn't appear to be as much heat on him as some of the other guys.
Well, I do think he'll be gone after this season.
So, yeah, you know, I will be interested. You know, and the sad part is, I mean, even if they do get rid of him, you know, no, whoever comes in here, this, you know, the team isn't going to be that much better next year.
No.
You know, it's not like, you know, there's a big, you know, a big line of free agents looking to get in here or, you know, any of that stuff. So it's like, okay, you know, we'll see.
A sad, surprising situation with the Bears. Because when I first started watching them, even when they weren't a winner, when they weren't a division champion, they were always competitive. They always played hard. They always gave some exciting games. But this is a disaster. I mean, I've never seen it this bad before, except when maybe Abe Gibron was the coach.
Yeah, I remember growing up, the one thing they always used to say was, even though the Bears struggled and they never had a really good record, teams didn't like to play them because they were so physical, you really paid the price the next week. And now, I think it's more as much, I think it's as much the new style NFL as it is anything else now, because there just aren't really physical teams anymore because of the rules. You can't go out and, blow guys up like you used to be able to do. So.
Would you say that, I may have asked you this before, but in general, are weaker teams prone for more injuries than stronger teams?
Yeah, it would be interesting to, if we had the capability to track and see, who gets hurt and who doesn't and all that kind of fun stuff. But it does seem like teams with losing records have more injuries than teams with winning records. And you wonder if maybe that's part of the reason they have those losing records, is because guys are getting hurt all the time.
Right, a catch-22 situation, but it seems to me that the weaker teams have, in general, have more injuries, at least the last few years, than the better teams.
So, because I'm trying to think, the Patriots have suffered a lot of injuries here to start the season. But, and I know they had the tough loss in week one. They were in that game for about 3.5 quarters, and then Kansas City got away. But, man, they looked really good yesterday. Obviously, again, it's a New Orleans team that, for whatever reason, has just never figured out how to play defense. But, they seem to manage it. I think, knowing your personnel and coaching your personnel, the right guys know how to hide their guys. So I think that may have a lot to do with it. But obviously if the worst team in the league loses their best player, well, they're in a lot of trouble. So.
Yeah, we know if it's the NFL, things happen, there's going to be a lot of injuries, but I think there seems to be a lot of them over the last few years, really serious ones too. And with the rules being so much more stringent in terms of not allowing some of the stuff that went on years ago, that's surprising. It seems surprising that these things are happening.
Yeah. I also think now, the fact that we know more what an injury is now than they used to, because a lot of this stuff, guys would play through. You would turn an ankle or something, and, you'd go to the sidelines and they would tape it up, and you would be right back out there. Now, when you come off the field, there's a medical tent on the sidelines now. So, it's a whole different, type of game now. Because I know, like, I saw Cam Newton went down yesterday, and it didn't look like anything serious, but, obviously he's their franchise quarterback. They were super cautious with him. They took him off the field. He went into the medical tent. Then he came back out and played some more. He got hurt again. They checked him out. He was in the concussion protocol. They thought he had a concussion. He got checked on the medical tent again. He was ruled fine, and he came back out and played again. A lot of times, guys would have just went to the bench, sat down, and came out for the next series. There wouldn't have been all the medical stuff where he would have had to miss plays. And, I think that goes through all sports now. Obviously we've come such a long way now with medicine, and injuries are such a primary concern that, the slightest thing, and if you don't take care of it, there's people all over you.
Right. Of course, I go back further than most people do. I remember when Gale Sayers played for the Bears, of course, one of the great running backs, maybe the best I've ever seen. And he was hurt really badly. He wasn't supposed to suit up for the Sunday game. And George Halas, the coach at the time, went up to him, "I want you to play in this game, Gale." And guess what? Gale played in the game. But I don't think that's going to happen much anymore.
No, well, you know, you see things. I remember just going back, I think it was Jack Youngblood played in the Super Bowl with a broken leg. You know, they taped him up and set him up, and he played with a broken leg for the Rams. You know, I'm sure a lot of people remember the great Lonnie Lott story where he had a problem with his pinky finger, and he wanted to go back in the game, and he actually told them to cut it off so he could get back into the game. You know, and I mean, that's just how, you know, these guys' mentalities were. You know, I mean, even a guy like Terrell Owens, I know when the Eagles went to that Super Bowl, I think he might have played with a broken foot. I think he broke his foot during the game and still continued to play. And, you know, these guys had a little more of, you know, kind of that warrior mentality. I mean, now as you come through, you know, everybody is just so paranoid about injuries. And I understand, because the first thing that happens when, you know, your kid gets hurt playing junior football or high school football, the first thing the parents do is call a lawyer, you know, because they want to sue somebody. It's not even, is my kid okay? It's like, can you get my lawyer on the phone? So, you know, you kind of understand that, because everybody's got to protect themselves from these liabilities. And it, you know, I mean, it just, you know, it affects the games.
Well, you've heard these stories before. Years ago, the player would be severely injured, a lot of pain. What would they do at halftime? They'd inject him with maybe Novocaine, something, and he would go for the next half. And I think it happened to Butkus quite a few times, and I think he may have sued the Bears years later. I don't know if that anything ever came with that, but he certainly was injected many times when he went in playing hurt. But it's a different era, of course.
Yeah, I even remember Brian Urlacher talking about that in his post-career, about he, you know, there were times he needed injections at halftime, you know, to get through a game. And, you know, now I'm not even sure if that's an option now, if they would even consider doing something like that. You know, I mean, I could just imagine if, you know, word leaked that they were shooting guys up in the locker room with painkillers. Yeah. You know, God, the, you know, just the stories that would fly.
Oh, you cannot survive that kind of outcry from the press and everybody else. That was leaked out.
Yeah, you know, and again, I mean, things kind of elevate. And, you know, I can understand, I mean, maybe if your kid is, you know, preteen or whatever, you don't want him out there getting, you know, getting rocked in the head when he's that age, you know. But, you know, when they get to high school, if they're taught the game correctly, and that's the key phrase, you know, sometimes you just get a teacher who's a coach. You really need a coach first and then a teacher. You know, if you find, you know, if you've got the right guy, it's okay to let your high school kid play football. You know, but that's, you know, that's making sure they're taught correctly and, you know, all that kind of fun stuff. But you have to remember, I mean, human nature in a kid, the first thing he's going to do is put his head down to make a tackle. You know, that's just human nature. You know, and that's the one thing, the first thing they teach you in wrestling and the hardest thing to learn is tuck your head. And I can tell you from my own experience, the first time you whack your head on that mat and you're seeing stars, you never forget to tuck it again. So,
a valuable lesson, huh?
You know, it's, you know, and sometimes you have to learn that way. I mean, obviously you don't want anybody getting seriously injured, but sometimes, you know, you need that little ding or just that little knock or, you know, bruise or whatever it is to kind of go, oh crap, he was right. I should have done that. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know, after, you know, your parents had told you something and you did it anyways, and you can't admit to them that they were right. So
that's what's called learning the hard way.
Yeah. You know, and that's how a lot of times you gotta do that in sports.
Sure.
So, you know, you just want to, one of those fun things, but We'll see how it goes. Hopefully nobody gets hurt tonight when they play. Everybody will be okay. So yeah, I don't even think if they announced, is Odell Beckham Jr. going to play? I haven't even looked to see if he's been declared eligible tonight. Is he still
considered a game time? They weren't sure it was a game time decision or if he's going to play tonight or not.
Yeah. Well, I know originally, I had heard earlier in the week, they were saying there was no way he would be back, but then all of a sudden he was doing light running at practice and all this other stuff. And it was kind of like, oh, wait, maybe he'll play tonight. It doesn't look like they have many updates here. They've got the last update looks to be 9 hours ago, and they say his status is still up in the air. So,
or they say questionable. Isn't that the parlance they use? Questionable.
Yeah. Well, the NFL has a few. Yeah, a few designations on what they how they label guys. So.
Well, they certainly would need him tonight. That's for sure.
Yeah, God. After the way their offense looked last week, they.
Yeah.
They definitely need a. Need something, but I found this poll online, and I need to run it by you because this is right up your alley. And we had the passing of Bobby Heenan, who was a legendary wrestling manager. And I found this poll of they have this listed as the top 10 best managers of all time. And this is how the vote rang out. So I'm going to go through all 10. Try to contain your laughter because I don't know how some of these people made the list. No surprise, since he just passed yesterday, Bobby Heenan is number one. They have Paul Heyman at two, Jimmy Hart at three, Paul Bearer at four, Jim Cornette at five. This is where it got funny for me. They have Miss Elizabeth at six, Captain Luz at seven, Freddie Blassie at eight, Mr. Fuji at nine, and J.J. Dillon at 10. I guess first, what do you think of this list? And then start telling me who they missed, because there's a lot of people who should be on here that aren't.
No, they missed a lot. And Miss Elizabeth is a joke. I mean, come on. Why would she even be on the list? How do they select her? Except for
that, they don't explain the process for picking these guys. What my guess is it was just somebody who was a WWE fan, and these were the people they could remember.
Right. Well, I certainly think they missed, for example, Wild Red Berry, who was the manager of the Kangaroos. In my opinion, the best tag team in history. And he was a very, very flamboyant. He was an amateur wrestler and a good light heavyweight wrestler too in his day. Competed very successfully in Southern California, and he was a good manager too. I don't know if you remember him or not. Wild Red Berry, weighed about 200 pounds. Quite humorous, some of the stuff he did when he managed the Kangaroos. I certainly think they missed a boat on him. I'm trying to think of who else. Number one, Paul Jones. You remember him? He was
an
effective manager. Very good manager, managed several teams. And, of course, Bobby Heenan. I'm trying to think of some other managers right now. Names are escaping me. So, Paul Heyman, of course.
Yeah, well,
there are some legitimate numbers.
The one guy who popped into my head was, it was the Grand Wizard, right? Was that his name?
Right, the Grand Wizard and who managed the Sheik, among others. And the Sheik had another manager besides the Grand Wizard. I'm trying to remember who it was. But certainly those guys were well up there on the list. But Jim Cornette.
Yeah, back then. Obviously the managers don't have quite the role that they used to have. Heyman is really the only throwback guy now who's actually a mouthpiece for his wrestler.
Right.
Which is what guys used to be back.
Don't forget Strangler Lewis. who managed Lou Fast for years and years. And I think that was more of a, he was losing his eyesight. He's virtually blind. I think Fez gave him that job, but he did manage Lou Fez for many, many years, and Fez was the NWA champion. So there should be some credibility there.
So yeah, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Who else? You know, what other guys are, you know, out there?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Besides the Grand Wizard, who else manages Sheik? And he had several managers over the years. And that was one of them, of course, as you mentioned. But I can't remember who else managed him.
Was that, for some reason, the name Eddie Creechman popped into my head,
yeah,
but I wasn't
yeah,
sure if he
right.
was, if, yeah.
Yeah, yeah that's
okay.
Yeah, you're very good. You're doing better than I'm doing, because you remembered Eddie Creechman, who also managed the Sheik. Or as they used to call him, the wild man from the sands of the Sahara.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, I remember, you know, there were guys like, you know, Oliver Humperdinck had a really long career in, you know, the Florida territories before ending up
yeah.
in, yeah, you know, in WWF. And then I know, you know, Harvey Whippleman had a good run in Memphis before he ended up in WWE. He's really just kind of a comedy guy.
Yeah, he was known as Downtown Bruno, I believe, in the Memphis area.
Yeah.
But
so,
you
know, and then, you know, oddly, I don't know how the heck I forgot Paul Ellering, cause, since he managed the Road Warriors.
Right. And by the way, he was a legitimate tough guy, too. I think he had some records in bodybuilding. And so he was pretty tough in his own right. But certainly you had to put Paul Ellering in that mix.
So, yeah, and I, you know, I believe he's even managing a team now in that WWE farm system. So he's
yeah.
back. I don't know if he'll come up to the main roster or how they, you know, what they do or how they do it. But yeah, he's still there.
I wonder if he comes into the ring with the Wall Street Journal rolled up in his right hand, like he did with the Road Warriors.
Hopefully that would kind of make it, you know,
right.
if he did.
Right.
So.
Well, Paul,
you know, and I know they. You know, I know they talk about a lot of the, you know, the women who obviously come to the ring with the wrestlers, but I think the only one I actually considered a manager was when Sensational Sherry made the change, because, you know, as Sherry Martel, she was really successful as a female wrestler, you know, and then she switched over. I thought she did a good job as a manager, and obviously she knew the role better, but, you know, a lot of them, you know, are clueless. They're just out there to, you know, to be out there. So
now this will jog your memory, Banks. I don't know if you know this, but this is a real trivial question. You remember the original manager of the Assassins and the Devil's Duel in the WWA, an obscure manager called Captain Willie. Name ring any kind of a bell?
Not at all.
Yeah, well, he was kind of an odd character, but I guess who replaced him? Bobby the Brain Heenan, or the Weasel, as they, I think the Bruiser and the Crusher used to call him.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, you got to give the guy credit.
He
had an eighth grade education, and he was setting up the rings for Dick the Bruiser, and somehow got some low-paying jobs from him, and then gravitated into a great career.
Yeah, you know, definitely. Yeah, he did well. You know, and I mean, I know he had, you know, he had health problems for a long time,
oh,
and you know, what did he make
terrible,
it to 73? I think it was.
Yeah.
So
he did, and it was horrible. Who was that English manager? I'm trying to reflect. I can't remember his name now. It was in WWF for years, but I can't remember his name. He had that English. He was from legitimately.
Or Lord Alfred Hayes?
That's right. That's right. I couldn't remember his name. Boy, things are. But he had a pretty good run. As did Mr. Fuji. I forget Mr. Or was he? Was Mr. Fuji on the list?
Yeah, he was. I think it was nine or something like that they had him. So
yeah, I don't know if he belongs to be in the top 10. That's kind of a stretch. I would have to say definitely Jim Cornette belongs in the top 10.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, you know, J.J. Dillon always, you know, I thought he always did a nice job as, you know, a manager. He, you know, got his wrestlers out there and didn't really take away from any of them.
Right, and he was soft-spoken. He wasn't one of these flamboyant managers that you see from time to time. And, of course, he also was a wrestler for himself, a jobber for most of his career.
Yeah.
He didn't do too much in the
ring. You know, what about, you know, I know the one guy I always remember, what about Arnold Skolin? Do you think he was, you know, a quality manager?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I remember seeing him wrestle myself, and then when we didn't get the WWF here, he became the manager, I think, Bob Backlund? Known for his famous thing.
I thought he started out, did he start with Bruno first and then switched over to Backlund?
It's possible. It's possible, but I don't think he did much in the way of managing. I mean, he was there, but that's about it. You don't really remember too much about the Golden Boy, Arnold Skolin. Do those guys really need managers? I don't know. And most of the time, you don't see too many faces who needed managers.
No, it's rare. You know, occasionally, obviously, you get the guy who, you know, just can't cut a promo and needs,
right?
You know, needs the help there. And, you know, again, that's what these guys used to be for. You know, the business wasn't based on what you look like, and B, if you could cut promos. It was your actual skill in the ring. And, you know, sadly now it's kind of shifted to what you look like and if you can talk. So.
Yeah. As I mentioned many times, when I started watching from late 40s, early 50s, there were no managers. Very little in the way of interviews, and it's just wrestling. And it was treated a lot more seriously than, of course, it is treated now. And I miss those days, but they're gone. Now you need your promo skills.
Yeah.
You need everything to go with your wrestling ability. If you can't talk, you might as well forget about it.
Yeah, and the sad part is nowadays you don't even really need that much wrestling ability. You know, they find ways to hide that for you. You know, if they like the way you look. And I think I've told the story here before, but one of the funniest things we heard is when still with my couple of my buddies running a promotion called AAW, and one of the guys I was partners with, there was three of us who started it off. Don't believe the Wikipedia stuff. Danny Daniels and Jim Jesus had nothing to do with starting it. But one of my buddies had a friend who was a male model and never had any interest in wrestling. He'd come by the shows to support us and stuff and hang out, but never got in the ring, never wanted to wrestle. Actually got called from WWE because they liked the way he looked in a catalog, and they wanted to talk about giving him a contract to wrestle.
When he knew nothing about wrestling.
Right. He'd never been trained. He'd never taken a bump. He, you know, didn't even know how to lock up, but they liked his look and thought, oh yeah, no problem. We can just teach this guy how to wrestle.
Yeah. Would they pay for it though?
Oh yeah. Well, he would have went to, you know, whichever developmental territory they had at the time. I think it was still Florida Championship Wrestling.
Florida.
No, I think it was Florida. Yeah. And, you know, he would have went there and they would have paid for his training and all that other kind of stuff that they needed to do. So
how old was he at the time
when
he wanted to do this? Was he in his 20s?
He was in his late 20s. He was 26, 27. So
he never considered it though.
No, he had zero interest in it whatsoever. And obviously as a model, he made a whole lot more money. So
yeah. Now with a good look and a good promo skills, it's better than being a legitimate wrestler who actually has some moves in the ring. Quite unfortunate.
Yeah, you know, I You know, all I can think about is, you know, here myself, you know, by then I had, you know, been killing myself in the ring for, you know, 20 plus years and could barely walk. So, you know, and here's this guy who had zero interest in it, getting the dream that every indie guy's, you know, wanted.
Yeah, where's the justice in that, right?
Yeah, you know.
There isn't any.
So, it was, you know, it was just one of the more humorous things that, you know, happen along the road. And, you know, I'm sure that probably happens quite a bit. You know, they're probably like, oh, hey, you know, remember for the longest time, that's how they hired women.
Yeah.
You know, they could care less if you had any wrestling ability at all. They wanted to know what you looked like. So.
I told you in the 40s and the 50s, it was very, very difficult to break into the business. Unless you knew somebody or had some strong amateur background, you had no chance to get in at all. That's how tough it was.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, obviously, it's just as tough now to make it. You know, you legitimately almost have to know somebody, or, you know, you need somebody to go to bat for you. It's rare that they just pluck you out of obscurity on the indie scene. So, you know, you need real good promotions. You know, somebody's got to be behind you, and they got to make sure they're seeing your stuff. You know, because there's a million talented guys out there on the indie scene that are just never going to get a shot because nobody knows who they are.
And the WWE does nothing in terms of checking the independent scene and saying, hey, maybe this guy might make it or that guy might make it. They don't even bother doing that anymore.
No, you know, I think they kind of rely on you sending them your stuff. You know, I mean, they're inundated with guys sending them, you know, their photos or, you know, well, it would be, you know, like a CD now or whatever, but it used to be tapes, you know, stuff like that for, you know, suggestions or, you know, if you know the right guy. I mean, there still are guys out there, you know, if you happen to say you're going to Harley Race's school, you know, and Harley suggested that they take a look at you, you would get a tryout. You know, there still are schools out there like that where the top guy is connected enough to where he can make one call and you get a look.
Yeah, you remember Killer Kowalski's wrestling school in Boston? He had several of his trainees make it in the WWF or WWE, including Triple H, for example, was trained by Killer Kowalski, Perry Saturn, among others, China. Well, I hate to even bring her name up, but I mean, she was trained by Kowalski's wrestling school. There's some other ones too. I'm trying to remember. I can't remember the name offhand, but he charged a couple thousand bucks, but I guess he trained properly.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, now, you know, the sad part is, you know, there's a, you know, well, it's not as bad as it used to be, but for a while, you know, there was a wrestling school on every corner, and the guys training these guys had absolutely no business training them. And, you know, a lot of them were hacks who didn't know what they would do. And, you know, they'd go out on the road and they'd get beat up by some veteran because they would blow up. You know, and it's just, sadly, it's kind of how it happens.
Wow.
Oh, all right. Look at that. The hour is done already. Yeah, we're all done. So Stu and I are taking off. Don't worry, we're coming back tomorrow at 5 o'clock to do it again. Stu's been gracious enough to fill in for Dan again. You know the deal while we're gone, though. Get over to sportstimeradio.com. Check out what's going on there. Follow the link over to the Facebook page. Give that a like, please. Don't forget the Twitter feed, which is at sportstimeradio. You can find me out there on Twitter as well. And now don't forget, as cool as this is for you to jump on and listen to Stu and I live, you can find the podcast anytime you want at tunein.com.